Why so serious?
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game, and still getting trying to play you.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game?
Yeah! Welcome to the Toy Department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, it's Toy Department time, Tuesday edition. I'm Derek Madden. He's Matt Kolsky. How are you on this Super Bowl week, sir?
We haven't actually talked about this, but quite honestly, I'm awful.
You're right. I was not expecting, quite honestly, I'm awful.
It's nothing about Super Bowl. Something's wrong with me physically. I don't know what. I think we talked last week about the COVID test that my whole family got sent for because my son had a fever for like a week at that point. I had been having a fever for a few days on and off, and we are all negative for COVID, which is great. But a week later, I have a splitting headache, an on and off fever, and I haven't slept in days. I can't sleep. So I am delirious and unwell. But otherwise, what else is going on? I might as well do a podcast.
Yeah. One, I think maybe you should go back and get another test.
Well, I have a video visit with my doctor after our podcast today, so we'll see what she says.
And two, maybe you don't want to watch this. It certainly wasn't part of the homework. But the most recent Real Sports on HBO had a really good story about athletes who are COVID long haulers. You know what a long hauler is?
Yep.
That was fascinating and slightly terrifying, but a really good watch.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, I've had two COVID tests in the last couple months. They've both been negative. My son and wife have. My son's been tested twice. My wife gets tested all the time because she's a medical worker. None of us have ever been positive. So I don't know that there's reason to believe it's COVID. At the same time, like, I don't know what's wrong with me. Anyway, but this is probably not a topic for the podcast.
Yeah. But it's not breaking. That's the part that I would worry about.
Yeah. Believe me.
Right,
I'm worried about it.
You know what I mean? Like,
no, we're at,
you just had a fever.
We're at about 2 weeks. And now look, my fever has not gotten up to like 102 or anything like that. It's been a little bit of like, it's been mild fevers on and off. But yeah, it's a little concerning.
Yeah, you're right. You have a Jewish mom. You don't need me doing that for you.
That's true. I do.
I'm sure you're getting plenty of concern about your health without me.
Yep, I got a wife and a mother, so you know.
Okay. Let's get into that. I hope I didn't offend anybody. It's just life when you have Jewish parents.
No, I mean that's part of the gig. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, let's get into shows for this week. we're gonna do that, and then a couple Super Bowl prop bets at the end. Throw in some prop bet magic for people. Does that work?
Sure. I got just a couple little ones written down that I like. We could talk about it.
Okay. I think we should try to keep it to a couple because that's a segment that gets away from us every year if we're not careful.
Agreed.
where do you want to start this week? We got Flack, Euphoria, Lupin, and the Little Things.
I felt like this was a really good week, so I'm kind of open to whatever.
Okay. Let's start with Flack because I watched all of Flack.
Me too.
You know, it's only six episodes, and I had some time on Sunday. There was no sports.
it gathers momentum on you too. Like, I'm not going to tell you there was any point in watching six episodes of Flack where I was like, "This show is spectacular," but I also did not want to stop watching.
Yeah, it's quite watchable. I don't know that it's great.
I'm prepared to say definitively it is not great.
Yeah, yeah. But it all kind of works. You know what I mean? It's you know, Anna Paquin plays a London PR rep.
Right.
And I think that they, like, the one, if I'm going to criticize the show at all, I would say that I feel like it's going for something, A, that we've sort of seen before. You know, like, this show to me was female Californication, if that makes sense.
Okay, yeah.
Right? Like, you've got the complicated anti-hero
with
her, a little bit fish out of water, right? Yep. Like, instead of New York to LA, it's New York to London, with her workplace full yep. of quirky people who tend to push things a bit too far.
Her crazy best friend.
Yeah. And
then
you're kind
of drugs.
Leaning into these elements of society. There's a lot of drugs. There's a lot of indiscriminate sex.
Yep. And a lot of just like horrible people doing horrible things.
Yeah, but they're kind of charming, so you don't mind watching, right?
Yep.
That's right. They're kind of the same show.
I did not think of that, but that's a great comparison. And yeah, I watched pretty much all of Californication, even though I'll readily admit that's not the greatest show ever. So I think I'm pretty in on this. You know, I don't know if there's more coming, but Anna Paquin is pretty good. And I actually thought her friend, her assistant, the boss, like, there's a lot of good acting in this show.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, all the characters are pretty winning,
yep.
I think, you know, and, you know, situationally, they make some choices that are not good, but interesting to watch.
Awful. There's awful decision. This show is filled with awful decision making.
And by almost everyone involved.
Yes. Yeah. Even the people whose job it is to fix the awful decisions consistently make awful decisions, which I think is kind of the point. And I'm not sure they're trying to do or say anything particularly meaningful here, but I think they've created an entertaining television show.
I would watch more of it. Did you have a favorite episode?
That's a good question. I did really like the, I want to say Bradley Cooper, but Bradley Whitford episode.
Yeah, that was mine. The plane episode.
It was really funny. It was different than the other ones because it was sort of, in a weird way, kind of a bottle episode. He is so funny and good at that character.
Yeah.
And just the sort of situation is pretty hilarious.
Yeah, I kind of like it when he does when he kind of does the same thing,
yes.
but with the like a prick edge
right.
versus like the West Wing Bradley Whitford, which is like a nice guy sort of edge to his
right
snark. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's totally true. That's totally true. Not that I have a great familiarity with the West Wing version, but like, yeah, this is a Bradley Cooper. I keep saying it, Bradley Whitford character that we've. That we've kind of seen before, but with this, the like asshole edge that is often on the inside of the character is an exposed nerve in this episode.
Yeah, and he's yielding it like a weapon.
Yep.
Yeah,
and he's really funny, man. It's just really fun. That whole episode, they did a really good job of creating the sort of chaos that everyone is trying to function in on a plane in that episode. Like the speech Anna Paquin gives to the flight attendant is tremendous.
And it's right. It's great. They do a great job because it's the chaos in that airplane is not any different than the chaos in her office. You know what I mean?
Right. Right. It's the Anna Paquin chaos spins into a plane, basically. Right.
Yeah. Or in any of the various houses that she may be crashing in that night.
Man, that's a lady who sleeps in a lot of different places. Not sexually,
she is couch
literally.
Surfing. Yeah. Yeah. All right. I don't know if it deserves any deeper examination than that, but I think we're in on flack.
I don't think there's anything deeper to find, but that doesn't mean it's not an entertaining television program.
Okay. Let's pivot to Euphoria.
Yeah.
I watched this episode, the Jules episode, And I think I'm now of the opinion that Euphoria is underrated.
Yep.
I think
you know
this,
what my thought was
a really fucking good show, man.
You know what my first thought when it ended was, you know, to use the construction we've stolen from another much more famous podcast, Euphoria is the belt holder.
Wow, that is strong praise.
What have we seen on television that's better than these two special episodes since they started airing?
Yeah, I don't know that there's an answer to that.
They're artful. It's weird. Emotional.
HBO's kind of been in hibernation, by the way, like for a little bit now.
A little bit,
right?
A little bit. I mean, like they're sneaking some movies in, which helps.
Since Nicole Kidman.
Yeah, and we didn't even love that, right? I mean, we ended up hating it. So,
but they haven't even been trying. By the way, SNL was not great, but they did do a pretty good skit around that, around Nicole Kidman singing the theme song of that show.
Oh.
That was pretty good. Yeah.
SNL is not great is just, like, you don't have to say that out loud as far as I'm
concerned. You're right. It is sort of a given at this point.
Yeah. So, in any event, this episode in a lot of ways is similar to the Rue episode in that it's quieter and more just a conversation than just about anything we've seen in Euphoria before these special episodes. But this one builds in some of the incredible visual artistry that we saw throughout the season in a way that I just think is tremendous. They do such a good job of examining and honoring the feelings of these complicated young people. And I just don't know that we've really seen that.
And this is sort of a special episode, not in a season, that was like very necessary, right?
Yes.
Like, because there's a lot of Jules's perspective on events that we've already seen that gets filled in.
Did you watch
in this episode?
Did you watch the making of a special thing they have on HBO for this episode?
The little vignette that came after? Yeah,
yep.
I saw that happen to keep running as I was watching it.
Because I did not realize, I mean, I don't know why I would have known, but Hunter Schaefer, the actress who plays Jules, co-wrote that episode. And as they talk about, I mean, it sounds like one of the reasons that there seems to be such a thoughtful and well-handled examination of these emotions and their life is because this young trans woman has had a huge impact on the writing and design of her character. And I just, the talent that Hunter Schaefer has is kind of overwhelming.
Yeah. She talks in it too about how connected she feels to the character, and you can see that on screen. And I think the same is equally true for Zendaya's character. You know,
I think
she is very collaborative in the writing of Rue.
And I think Sam Levinson deserves some credit for this because, like, I think there's a natural instinct to be like, these kids don't know what they're talking about. But I think by actually allowing them to participate in their character building, they've created some of the best characters we've seen.
Yeah. I mean, I'm trying to think of a television romance that is as richly drawn as Rue and Jules. You know what I mean? You're talking about teenagers. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
credit to this show. I think too, I don't know if there is a show that uses contemporary music as well as Euphoria does. Like, it's such an integral part of the show. And like in this episode, like, the Lord's Liability, you know what I mean, is just like, which is a song I've heard a ton of times, but like in this context, like, I felt like really sung, no pun intended. And like, you're really feeling it, and it sort of lets you live in these moments. And so often it's, you know, shot, and I mean this as a compliment, like a music video. Like, it's visually interesting, like a music video is. And so I think that's a whole other credit, that the show has a really cool visual language. It often does really interesting things with time. You don't necessarily know what order sometimes the events that you're seeing take place in.
And I think that was especially true in these two episodes, that the,
yeah,
you know, where where you are in the timeline is a little bit confused. Exactly what the order of events is a little bit jumbled. But there's never a sense of not understanding the emotional weight of what's happening. That scene towards the end of the episode where Jules comes into her room is just gutting, man. I sat watching the credits of this being like, what's better than this on TV? And I don't have an answer.
Yeah. The, and I should also say the guy that plays Jules' dad, I thought did a really tremendous job.
Yeah.
In this episode, you know.
He really did. And just the writing of this, and to your point, like, we're seeing in this episode a lot of stuff we've seen already, but we're getting a totally different perspective on it. We're learning things about Jules we never knew. We're understanding her struggles in ways that we weren't able to watching a show that was built around Rue, where she was the central character, and we were experiencing things sort of through the lens of her experience. And, man, it's crazy to think that if not for a pandemic, we might not have gotten these two episodes that now feel so essential to the storytelling of this show.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think there's just a lot to be excited about for, what season two is going to be based on what we've seen so far.
Well, these episodes, I think, expand.
Sorry, go ahead.
I think these episodes expand the possibilities of what we might expect to see in season two to an extent, right?
Yeah.
Like, there's just they have shown us that there is way more thought about the interior life of these characters than was displayed on screen in season one, and that's a fine choice to make. Like, you want your characters to have rich interior lives that aren't necessarily explained on screen, but I think there were certainly people who criticized Euphoria for potentially having an inability to bring those emotions to bear in a more specific, less visual way, and it's very clear that they're capable of that from these two episodes.
Yeah. Look, I think a lot of the initial talk about Euphoria just kind of focused a lot on all the drugs and sex, sexual misadventures that were happening.
Yeah, exactly. The kids doing things we're not used to seeing kids do on screen. But I do think these two episodes have been so thoughtful and character-driven and conversation-driven that it exposes a whole new layer of what they're doing.
Yeah. While still sort of maintaining kind of like the tone poem vibe.
No doubt. Especially this
permeated
episode.
A lot of season one. Yeah.
Yeah. The Rue episode was much straighter, just conversations. This episode definitely. You feel the sort of pastel vibe that they created. And yet there's still more insight through conversation into Jules's character than we've ever had before.
Totally. And the Rue episode, I feel like, there's a sign, hey, this is a bottle episode sign. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Sort of hanging over that, where this one, I feel like it was a little bit more connected to what we'd seen so far.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's probably right.
Yeah, but really, really enjoyed both. I would say probably this one even more than the Rue one.
I would agree, and that's not to say it's not to say anything negative about the Rue one, which I loved. But I do think this, like, if you watched the Rue episode and you were like, "Man, this is really talky and thoughtful and interesting," and I wonder how they can integrate this sort of talkiness into what they did in season one. I think the Jules episode is sort of, here's how we might be able to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and good therapist, man.
Great therapist.
First session, just kind of nailed it.
Yeah. Who's that actress, by the way? I recognized her.
I don't know. I have seen her in a number of things. I feel like I don't know. We may need to look that up as we go.
Yeah, I'll look it up.
Okay, so we are now into sections of things. I would say the things that we're going to talk about, I liked progressively less. So maybe we'll get into some areas of disagreement. So I'm going to start with Lupin, which I didn't dislike.
Okay.
But here's like, it was fine. Here's what I would say about Lupin. Like, if these were American actors I think this would be, this could be a network TV drama, if that makes sense. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like that is, that's about the level of show Lupin is. It's kind of like, like, it's fun to watch him be a master of disguise and pull off heists and trick police. The backstory and sort of central mystery, like, is a thing for him to do. I don't know that it's particularly compelling. It's fine. The whole thing is kind of just fine to me.
I don't know that I can argue too deeply with that, other than to say I enjoyed it more than you. I'm not going to tell you this is, like, this is a pretty standard, you know, French, but pretty standard cool criminal with a legitimate axe to grind doing his thing series, right?
Yep.
I don't know that it is particularly well explained from, like, seriously, how is he good at this stuff, this good at stuff aspect? I don't know.
Yeah, and I suspect that if you thought about it too much, it probably comes undone a little bit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
So I kind of just tried not to.
Right. That said, I did enjoy the character. And I did enjoy the caper elements, even if they're not totally well explained. Like, it has a... Do you remember the movie The Saint?
I do, with Val Kilmer.
Yeah, that's kind of what it felt like to me. Like, this dude is somehow just incredibly good at stuff. Costumes, fighting, gymnastics, robbery, clever plans. And no one totally tells you why or how he's so good at everything. But,
well, he read a book about Lupin.
Well, right. I don't think like reading Agatha Christie makes you a detective, but
I don't either, but that's sort of what the show was.
That's sort of what happens. Yeah. So you know, there's nothing to sort of cover that hole. But at the same time, like, I just kind of felt like this is a, it's a fun little caper, and I think I enjoyed it as such.
Yeah, I'm not saying anyone shouldn't enjoy it per se. Like, I think fun little caper is an appropriate way to describe it. Like, yeah, to have fun with it. I just don't know that there's much more than that. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't really get beyond that, and I think the attempts at character development can be a little perfunctory, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
With all due respect and meaning as little offense as I possibly can, this feels a lot like a thing that was made in France because it wasn't quite good enough to get made in Hollywood.
Yeah. That's sort of where I'm at. I think that, like, the fact that it was, you know, it was kind of rattling around, it may still be rattling around the Netflix top 10.
Yeah.
Has a lot to do with the situation, both the platform, you know, that it's French.
Yep.
You know, I think probably makes it a little bit more exotic than it might be were this on Fox.
Yeah, and let me say,
this definitely feels like a show that could have been on Fox after, like, Lone Star or something.
Totally. And I also think, like, there's an element of not being as worried about the plot holes because it's in French and you're just trying to keep up, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I'm just trying to read what they're saying fast enough to understand what the hell's going on here. I don't have time to think too deeply about how reading a handful of mystery novels turned this man into a super spy.
Yeah. There was a bit of a problem for me. We talked about this a little bit last week when we assigned it for homework. So the first episode I watched in English with dubbing.
Terrible.
Which I found to be, really distracting. So I switched to the subtitles at your suggestion, and that was better. But that also means that it is a you are locked in. You cannot be doing anything else when you're watching a subtitle show, right? So it wasn't ideal for me because this is the kind of show that I definitely would like to be doing something else while I'm watching.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the tricky thing about like a decent but not enthralling show in a foreign language is like I can't check my email or I lose track of what's happening.
Yeah. Exactly. So that is another challenge.
I'd love to hear what a fluent French speaker thought of this.
I would too, actually. I would too. I don't think I know any. So
neither do I. So I guess we're SOL on that.
Yeah. So if anyone out there is a fluent French speaker, and watch this in the original language.
Let us know what you think.
Yeah.
I will say, I did find, like, on the positive side, I did find Omar Sy incredibly charming and good.
Yeah, agreed. And I feel like the show wouldn't work at all if he wasn't. So.
Correct. He's carrying this show. I think we can agree.
Yeah, 100%. You know, he's the Queen Latifah.
That's right.
That setup.
That is right. Who are you calling a bitch?
I think that's a pre-joke pre-podcast joke, but whatever.
To let people behind the curtain, we briefly discussed potentially watching The Equalizer with Queen Latifah before deciding we're going to do different things with our time.
Yeah, correct. okay.
Quickly, before we move on.
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
This is actually one show ago, but the... the psychiatrist in the Euphoria special episode is named Lauren Weedman. She is an American actress and comedian known best for her regular role on Looking on HBO. She's also been in...
I didn't watch Looking, really. So.
No, she's also been in the film Date Night, the shows Hung and New Girl. So, like, you've seen her around. She was in The Little Hours.
You've seen her around. I've seen some of those things, and the name, even the name, rung a bell.
Yes,
said it, man. So, you know, the Weed Man.
that is a name she seems to have given herself. Okay. Born Lauren Huntington.
There you go. Okay. So that brings us to The Little Things, which Lauren Weedman is not in, I don't think.
No. She was in The Little Hours, though.
Yeah. Right, The Little Hours, but not The Little Things. But it's not, you know, it's not The Little Hours that get you caught.
No, it's not. So you didn't like this?
I did not like this at all.
Interesting.
I thought it was quite bad.
Wow.
Yeah.
Why was it bad?
I just think that the story in general was not compelling. I thought the actors were really hammy. I thought it was tonally, you know, kind of just sort of low rent David Fincher with like.
That's about right.
You know, right? With like The Rain in L.A. Yeah. The dialogue, like just the pulp novel pot boilery cop dialogue.
Yeah, this would be my biggest complaint. Because I didn't love this, but I didn't think it was terrible. I didn't find Jared Leto hammy. I thought he was pretty good. I mean, it's an over the top character, but I enjoyed the performance. I gotta say, like. 5 or 10 minutes into this movie, my wife turned to me and was like, "Is this an Amy Sherman Palladino film?" Because they talk, man. There is a lot of talking, and it comes at you fast, and it's not that well enunciated for the most part. Like,
sure isn't.
It's a monster of unnecessary dialogue.
Yeah, and I gotta say, I generally like this guy, You know, I had my issues with Mr. Robot, but they weren't necessarily issues with Rami Malek.
Mm-hmm. Nah, he wasn't
great. But what the fuck is he doing in this film? Like, first of all, he's playing Elliot from Mr. Robot as detective, right? Like, the mannerisms and stuff are the same.
Right.
But, well, like, you know, with this like, slight frame, it's a deeply weird performance, I felt like, and it was just so unconvincing. Like,
This might be unfair. But I don't know that Rami Malek can just play a guy. Like, I don't know that I can ever buy him as, like,
just a guy
with a family. And, yeah, he's also a cop with a bug up his ass about catching criminals. But, like, I don't believe – just because of the way he looks and his mannerisms, I kept waiting for the twist where he turned out to be the murderer. You know what I mean? That's what he embodies, and it's his look, it's his sort of awkwardness, and I don't know if those were choices for this role that he made that didn't turn out, or if that's just the irrepressible Rami Malek-ness that he can't get rid of, but this is a terrible casting job, just terrible. I mean, that should have been like Joel Edgerton or something.
Oh, that's a good one. There are lots of people that you just wouldn't think have been better for this role. And I can understand Rami Malek's desire to stretch a little bit.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, but you don't cast him in this. You just can't cast him in this.
Yeah. But like this, I don't know that this is the place. You know, I thought, because I was thinking about this while I'm like, you know, Freddie Mercury wasn't Elliot from Mr. Robot. You know what I mean? Like, that was a very different guy.
Yes.
But also, you know, not a regular guy. So maybe it's just that he can't be a regular guy. I didn't seem like he was trying to be a regular guy.
Well, like, but that's kind of what I'm saying is, like, maybe he actually just can't try to be a regular guy because of the way he looks and his sort of awkward mannerisms. Like, he's a weird looking and moving man. And for the Freddie Mercury part, he obviously embodied Freddie Mercury's movement and speech patterns in a way that was reasonably impressive, right? So that's like a different sort of acting performance, but there's a target. It feels to me like without that target to sort of mimic, there's just too much Rami Malek in this character for me to believe he's just like a workaday detective trying to do his job and take care of his family.
Yeah.
Like, how can that guy who looks and walks like that just be a normal dude? It doesn't track.
Right. And he has to do all, like, he's required to do all of this pulp pop boilery detective dialogue, you know, or occasionally come across as a tough guy.
Right.
You know, but it seems like there's, like, umpteen conversations with, with Denzel where he's got to be like, don't piss on my leg and tell me it's raining.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know. I feel like somebody's just like, hey, man, we can get Leto, Washington, and Malek, and we can say we got 3 Oscar winners in this movie.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
I tend to agree with that perspective, that this movie was more about getting it made with stars than it was about making a good film. Although I have to say, like, the overall premise, and I'm going to have to spoil a little bit here, so if you still want to watch this after listening to our conversation, skip ahead a little bit. But
yeah, we're much less in disagreement, honestly, about this than I expected.
Yeah, I mean, I just didn't – I enjoyed it overall a little bit more, and I think the reason why is that I enjoy the overall message and premise of the film.
Okay. That is the little things that get you caught?
Well, enjoy is the wrong word. Like, I think it's an interesting construction of, and this is the big spoiler, of here's this cop that accidentally killed a person trying to help this other cop headed down the same path avoid that path. And, like, it's not actually about solving a crime. It's about staying above water as a human being.
Yeah, there's some of that, but it's also like, didn't you think it was like, how many, and I understand that Seven, which is, I think, a very clear influence on this movie, had sort of the same thing going on. But isn't it really weird when you have a suspect who is so clearly baiting the cop into, like, please head down this path that will ruin your life. You know what I mean? Like, I'm trying to get you to kill me.
Right.
Like, I just can't imagine that happens very often. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's probably right. I'm not going to say this is like a noir realistic cop movie at all.
Yeah.
But I didn't philosophically, I'm interested in that thought process of, like, at the end of the day, how do you live your life?
Right.
Because do you think Jared Leto killed
those people?
What's that?
Or was he really? Do you think Jared Leto killed anybody? Or was he just
trying
to get the cop to kill him?
I don't know what Jared Leto was trying to do exactly, other than, like, be a crazy person who's fucking with the cops that are fucking with him. You know, I think it's more like, I'll fuck with you back.
Yeah.
But
how's the trunk space?
I did find him, part of it is just every time I see Jared Leto, I'm like, man, Jordan Catalano. You know, like, the fact that this is where his career went is pretty interesting, and I do think he is pretty good.
There's no doubt of his talent as an actor, and I think he's been great, including in some Fincher movies.
Yeah.
At times, I do think he is also quite capable of laying it on a little thick.
That's fair. This was not,
which he's not doing in this particular performance.
I'm not going to tell you it was a thin paint job on this performance at all. But I did not find it off-putting. I found it kind of affecting, incredibly creepy.
Interesting. There are a lot of Jared Leto performances I love. I'm not here to shit on Jared Leto. But I didn't think it was.
I mean, I don't know that we're here. Even Rami Malek, who we took a big dump on, I don't think we're here to shit on anybody. It just this didn't. I would agree with you that it didn't quite come together. Although I did not dislike it as much as you did.
Yeah, and I would say honestly, it's kind of like, as Denzel performances go, like, pretty mediocre.
Yeah, I don't know that it's mediocre, but it is boring.
Yeah.
I don't know
I'm
not
mediocre
sure that,
on the scale of Denzel performances. Not trying to say it was a mediocre performance. Yeah.
No, I would say it's mediocre on the scale of Denzel characters more than anything. Like,
that might be it.
There's just not enough of that character. And when you finally sort of understand where he's coming from and his motivations, like, the movie's almost over, you know? I didn't think the character was great, but Denzel's always good.
Yeah, he sure is.
I mean, it's like, I never watch a Denzel performance, and I'm like, oof, wish I hadn't watched that.
Yeah. No, the bar is high for him. Or the floor is low. Maybe that, or floor is high. Floor is high. That's the
I think the floor is high.
The
yeah.
floor is high.
Yep. Good job. Third time's the charm.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Got there.
Yep.
all right. So that's it for homework. Should we
was
talk
that
about
it?
Some Super
did
Bowl
we,
props?
Did we do the whole thing?
I think we did all four, right?
Wow. We're good. We're cranking right along on this thing.
I don't feel like we shortchanged any of them either, to be honest.
No, if this prop bet segment doesn't get away from us, we should be in good shape.
Oh, you just jinxed it.
Sure did. All right, so
we are screwed now.
Let's start with this. I know, like, the prop thing is, first of all, people love to talk about all these ridiculous props, most of which you can't actually bet anywhere, you know? Like, a lot of the props we see are just, like, things that someone wrote down on a cheat sheet for your Super Bowl party that you're not going to have, and you can't actually go to a sports book and bet them at all.
How depressing is that?
It's very depressing.
By the way, that we're not going to have a Super Bowl party.
It's going to be weird, man. You know, Damon has been talking about this for a week now on the radio show. Like, when's the last time? Now, for us, it's like, other than when the Niners were there and we were working. But when's the last time you watched a Super Bowl without a party? Nobody does.
I don't think I went to a party last year, I feel like.
Okay. I actually don't like Super Bowl parties. I'd rather just watch the football. But I still end up at least with a few people, you know? Like, I at least I end up at a gathering. Very rarely do I just watch the Super Bowl by myself or with my wife. And it's going to be kind of a weird deal.
Somebody always comes over. The prior year, I guess it was the prior year? No, maybe it was 2 years before. I just remember being at a big Super Bowl party for the Falcon Super Bowl.
Oh, no.
And then having to leave the party the last five minutes or so.
Yeah.
So I think I took a dip out of Super Bowl parties for a minute.
Right. Well, it is true that like the one time you probably don't want to go to a Super Bowl party is if your favorite team is playing in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, and they're leading 28-3 at halftime. And
well, I mean, even if they aren't, though, just like the stress and like if your team is playing in the Super Bowl and you're really a serious football fan, you're gonna yell at somebody at the Super Bowl party.
Yeah, particularly if they've never won a Super Bowl before.
Right. So, like, because someone's gonna walk in front of the screen, or like someone's gonna be talking too loudly during an important play, and like you're gonna snap. Like, if your team is playing, you're just going to yell at somebody at the Super Bowl party for no good reason.
Yes. Now, somehow I managed to find a Falcons-friendly Super Bowl party. And so it was not like most people were cool.
Yeah, but it's still depressing.
It was still, it was hard. Not a situation in which you wanted to necessarily be with other people.
All right, so let's talk about a couple prop bets. Do you have any that you like?
I do have a couple that I like.
Okay.
I like Tom Brady under 301.5 passing yards.
Ooh, interesting. Okay.
That is one I definitely like. I am on FanDuel right now. So hopefully these actually are props that you can actually gamble on. So I think most people can gamble on FanDuel, right?
Yep.
Maybe that's a state-to-state thing. I don't even know.
It's a state-to-state. It is, but
many people can gamble on FanDuel, so I feel like that's okay.
Yeah.
And then I also like largest lead of the game under 14.5 points, which is -115.
I like that a lot. I also had that one written down. It's 14
over.
And a
over
half.
Is minus one. Yeah. Over is -110. So it's not like you're getting a lot of extra juice on the on the under. And, 14.5, more than 2 touchdown lead is a lot.
I'm with you. I also don't see that happening. Here's a couple that I really liked. And these are all pretty football-y as opposed to, like, the goofy ones. Looking at the MVP list, I'm not sure it's worth betting Patrick Mahomes. But you can get Kelsey for MVP at +900. And I think there might be some value in that.
I think it's hard, right? Because any situation in which Kelsey has a big game probably means Mahomes has a big game, right? So that's the tricky.
That is the trick. And yet, if Travis Kelsey goes for 150 yards and 2 touchdowns, and Patrick Mahomes throws for 250,
That's the sweet spot, right?
That's right. And so it's not,
and that's possible, but that's why you got the odds that you do, right?
Exactly. That's my point. Is it's a line value thing, not a I think Kelsey's going to be the MVP. I think there's a better than 1 in 9 chance that he's the MVP.
I sort of like, and this is kind of almost the reverse of this bet. I like Mahomes for first TD.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is 1,200.
Well, that's pretty good. Oh, you mean running it in?
He'd have to run it in, yeah.
Yeah. I don't like that just because of his physical – like, he's been beat up. So I think they would have to be, like, on the goal line, and he's just diving in. I don't know that they're going to call a running play for Patrick Mahomes per se.
I don't know that they're going to call a running play either. But I also think that there's
he could just roll out and scramble.
He could
in.
Easily run it in on a non-call play. Yeah, you know
that's
what I mean?
Not bad.
Or, and it doesn't necessarily have to be for the goal line. Right, he could be 20 yards out and scramble for a TD. You're not going to get great. I think Kelsey and Hill are +300 each. You know what I mean?
So here's what I'm going to give you a twist on that, because I think part of the problem with Kansas City Well, both of these teams, really, is there's so many guys who could score. Like, we were talking to Michael Irvin on the radio today, and I proposed that this is the greatest assemblage of pass catchers on the two teams playing in the Super Bowl ever, and he did not disagree with me. If you just think of all the dudes who can catch passes in this game, Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce.
That was a really good flex by you, by the way. So I was talking to Michael Irvin about this.
Every week, baby. The playmaker. It's the highlight of my week almost every week. He's so freaking good. He loves football so much, and he always has something interesting to say. Love Michael Irvin. But because there's so much talent, there's some interesting odds on some pretty good players to score touchdowns. And specifically, I looked at the Tampa Bay first touchdown odds. So who scores the Bucs first touchdown? It doesn't have to be the first touchdown of the game.
Oh, I looked at this, actually, yeah. The first Bucs touchdown.
There are three guys who I think are really interesting bets here that I'll tell you which one is my favorite, but I think all three are good value bets. Gronk is plus 900. And, like, you can't tell me there's not a better than 1 in 9 chance that Rob Gronkowski gets that goal line toss for their first touchdown, right? Like, I'm not going to bet Gronk to have 100 yards or even 50 yards, but Brady looks for him around the end zone.
Yes. Yeah, he sure does. But I think, right, I mean, Brady is a spread it around guy.
That's right. And that's why
I think any of the long shot, like Cameron Brate, I think is really good long shot.
That's my
play,
second one.
You know what I mean?
Cameron Brate is plus 1600, 16 to 1 odds. That seems like a great value. But the favorite for me is Scotty Miller. Scotty Miller is plus 1400 to be the Bucs' first touchdown scorer. And Tom Brady loves that kid.
He does. A long pass is probably the scenario in which that happens, I'm guessing, right? Like, he's not necessarily a guy he's looking to in the red zone, but
probably not as much, although I would absolutely not rule out a swing pass to Scotty Miller in the red zone where he scores, right? I mean, I think certainly if you are Kansas City, when you get into the red zone, you're keying on Gronk and Evans, right? Like, those are the guys you're most worried about, and that's how Scotty Miller gets open, man.
Yeah. A lot of guys you got to worry about on that team, for sure.
On both sides.
Like, I think Antonio Brown's a good bet.
Yeah, on both sides of this, man.
Antonio Brown get a Super Bowl redemption. I mean, who isn't rooting for the – I mean, So glad we can have that fun storyline.
I also have a variation of your largest lead bet.
Okay.
This is always the case. You can bet a team to win by a specific point amount. So
you can do that in most games, actually.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. So for me, basically, like you were saying, I expect this to be a close game, back and forth, close game throughout. And so whoever ends up winning, I expect it to be by less than 6. And you can bet a team to win by 1 to 6 points, and you just get much better odds than by simply betting them to win. Now, of course, the downside is if they win by a touchdown, you lose that bet. But either Bucks or Chiefs by 1 to 6 points, depending on who you think is going to win, I think is a pretty solid bet.
Do you have a bet on the game, not like non-prop bets, like actual bets on the game at all?
I'm in like a picks pool, and you know, I'll make a pick on the radio. I don't do a lot of actual gambling. It's mostly just for entertainment purposes.
But so who's your pick, though?
It's going to be the Chiefs. I mean, I understand I'm, like, just opening my suit of armor wide open over the heart for Tom Brady to stab me, but I just don't know how you beat Patrick Mahomes right now. That team has not lost a meaningful game since D. Ford was offsides against New England 2 years ago. And I know we argued about this because you said there's like a there was a
Tampa's not that good.
You said week six was meaningful or something like that.
The term right. We argued about the term is meaningful.
Yeah,
you know what I mean,
but they have not lost a really big game, and frankly, they've barely lost any games. You know, they lost to the Raiders, and that's weird. It's hard to explain that, but it doesn't change the way I feel about this team's ability to finish, and they just.
Right, and obviously week 17 without Mahomes, you
right. That doesn't count.
You know,
so yeah, it's just it's. I just think they're too good. I think they're too good.
Right, like it's really hard to envisage Tampa Bay blowing out Kansas City.
I don't think it's possible.
But you can see Kansas City blowing out Tampa Bay.
Yep.
I think that's the difference. So.
One question.
Chiefs minus three. I got in early. Mm-hmm. I think it's 3.5 now. Is that right?
Might be. That's about right. I also think there is one caveat to this. Because I'm with you. If I was going to bet, that would have been the direction I'd put my money. But the Chiefs offensive line is an interesting question mark. And I guess the questions you have to ask are they beat up enough that Tampa Bay's defensive line can do to them what they've done to Green Bay twice this year? And if that's what happens, is Patrick Mahomes good enough to make it not matter? And I kind of think
that
he is.
That's the formula: is pressure on the D line from the D line, you know, maybe even up the middle, if not on the edges, and you know, like if Sue's probably going to need to have a big game for Tampa to win, I think.
And Shaq Barrett, too. They just got to be in Mahomes' butt all day long. And if they're not, I don't see how they don't get carved up. Now, Tom Brady might be able to keep them in it, even if they are getting carved up. But if this game turns into a shootout, I like the Chiefs a lot.
Yeah. I think you have to. So so we'll see if Tom Brady could just effing Tom Brady.
One other quick dumb prop I want to throw in. Do you know who's singing the anthem?
It's Eric Church, right? And then it's a duet, though.
That's right.
Correct?
Yes. Eric Church and Jasmine Sullivan, who you may know as a R&B artist. I am unfamiliar with Eric Church's work, but here's what I can tell you. When a country singer and an R&B singer get together to do a national anthem, they're going to deliver a straightforward rendition that ends in less than 2 minutes.
Okay, I think it's probably true.
How do you do? You can't.
He's one of those like grittier country types.
That's what
you know
I'm saying.
What I mean, like,
there's not going to be a home of the brave. That's not happening.
Well, what if Jasmine Sullivan's singing that part?
And he just sits there? I don't think so. I think this is going to be a straightforward duet that ends. And here's the other part of this, like. I don't really know who Eric Church is. I know who Jasmine Sullivan is because I really like female R&B artists. But the vast majority of this audience is going to hear Eric Church and Jasmine Sullivan introduced and go, who? And who does not get to sing for more than 2 minutes at the national anthem?
Eric Church is pretty big in that world, by the way.
In the country world. But how big is that, really?
I think it's fairly big, honestly.
Let's see what Let's see what Eric
certainly
Church's
certainly,
sales
certainly
are like.
Bigger than the rock world in which I inhabit.
Really?
Yeah. Eric Church plays arenas. That gives you an idea.
All right.
So, and he has the same management as like Metallica and the Chili Peppers and Muse and whatever. Okay. Anyway. Here are a couple more prop bets. By the way, I think we say this every year, but I'm just going to say it again in case you don't remember. Don't bet on the coin toss. It's dumb.
It's really dumb.
And you can't, like, since you're paying juice, right?
Yeah.
You're always getting worse odds.
You know what, though? Red Gatorade's a decent bet this year.
Yeah, that's the one I like. Plus 300.
Yep.
Yellow green lime at plus 400, I think, is also solid.
Just because it's the standard flavor, but both teams red,
and and good odds.
Yeah, yep.
Right. But you're right. You got two red teams. What will be said first COVID minus 500 or pandemic plus 300.
I wrote that down.
Pandemic at plus 300.
Yeah, you just bet pandemic because you hope that Jim Nantz is overly formal and says, like, coronavirus or something.
Exactly, which is quite possible. But, I mean, at minus three, at minus 500, like, they're begging you.
They're begging you to take COVID.
Not bet. To not bet, right? Like,
yep.
All right. How many times will Bill Belichick be mentioned? This is one I like. This is another one where they're begging you to take less than one.
Yep.
But more than one is minus 175.
I
feel like that's a lock.
It's got to be more than
mentioning
one.
Yeah. Like, so yeah, you're paying some juice there, but I feel like it's worth it. It's free money.
I tend to agree.
Primary color of Patrick Mahomes' headband. I feel like red is also a lock, but it's minus 400.
Can I give you one cross sport that I kind of like?
Yeah.
Donovan Mitchell and the Jazz are playing the Pacers. You can have his points minus 1.5 against Travis Kelce's longest reception of the day. So that means if Donovan Mitchell scores 27 points, Travis Kelce would have to have a 25-plus yard reception to beat you. And I actually think there's a good chance that Travis Kelce's pretty much – now, he may catch it a lot, but I don't know how many over 20 he's going to have.
What is Donovan Mitchell's scoring average?
It's like 23 right now, but improving, I believe.
23.
And yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they're on a roll, obviously. But okay, so yeah. So you're expecting, you know, 23 or 27. Could get as high up as 35, maybe.
Yep.
I think I like the Kelce side of that.
Okay. You think he's going to have a 35-yard reception? 30-yard reception?
Yeah, you're right. It's not travels 35 yards in the air, right?
Nope.
Yeah, I think he can hit high 20s, low 30s. It's a good bet, though. I think that's an interesting bet. Actually.
It's a really interesting bet because Travis Kelce is going to be targeted a lot, but a lot of it's going to be over the middle of the field, less than 20 yards downfield. So I think that what you're kind of betting on is, does Travis Kelce break one after the catch?
Yeah, right. That's exactly what you're betting on. Travis Kelce is also going to be focused on a lot by the Tampa Bay defense, but that's true with every defense he plays, that's, and it doesn't ever really seem to matter very much. So.
Ain't that the truth? All right, I feel like I've overextended our podcast with my football nonsense by plenty. I feel good about it.
Yeah, that's fine. Those were good. Those were good props. all right. So homework for next week.
Watch the Super Bowl.
Watch the Super Bowl. I feel like this may be a week where everybody's sort of laying down for the Super Bowl content-wise. Uh-huh. It's not a ton out, but we did find some things.
Yep.
Obviously, we loved Euphoria, and the team behind Euphoria, Sam Levinson, the writer and director, and Zendaya, have a movie coming to Netflix this week called Malcolm and Marie. It does not star Denzel Washington. But it stars his son, John David Washington.
And Zendaya, as you mentioned. So, yeah, it's a black and white drama, so that'll be interesting. But I am intrigued.
I am as well. And since, you know, it is a big football week, 30 for 30 with Al Davis, which
yes.
is – I'm kind of surprised it's taken them that long to make a 30 for 30 with Al Davis.
It's weird, right? I do feel like there's
He's led a 30 for 30 life, you know what
no
I mean?
No doubt. I do feel like there's been Raiders 30 for 30. Like, there was the L.A. one,
there was
right?
a Raiders. Yeah, there was an L.A. Raiders.
But this
30,
is about
the
Al
Ice
Davis.
Cube did, I want to feel
I think
like.
That's right. But this is about yeah. Al Davis suing the league.
Yes.
This is about Al
Davis. Al Davis versus the NFL.
That's right. His contentious relationship with the league office, which was sort of the in a lot of ways, sort of the central part of his character as a football owner.
Do you feel like that's over? Like, that's past?
Yes. They're just a bunch of rich guys colluding for their own pocketbooks now.
I kind of feel like that's pretty true now that it's just sort of.
Look, man, you can criticize a lot about guys. Al Davis, okay? You can talk about the way it ended. You could talk about being a megalomaniac later in life and not being willing to compromise in ways that probably hurt the team. You could talk about the relationship with his son. There's a lot to criticize. But, man, did he want to win. All Al Davis wanted to do was win football games and championships, and everything he did was through that lens. Everything. So I'm excited to watch this. It's a time when owners cared more about winning.
When you look at the scale, right? Yeah, you look at the scale of his life. Like, too involved in the team. You know what I mean? Like, too hands on in personnel matters in the team at the tail end of his life. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
It's a pretty small blip on the scale of Al Davis accomplishments. You know what I mean?
And, you know, at the same time,
it's a mild rebuke, you know?
Yeah. Because, you know, the things that don't necessarily get talked about because he's such a big character and did so many outlandish things is he was a champion for diversity hires. He was the sort of owner that actually cared about his players. And I don't know if that's a viable way to run a team anymore because of player movement and everything like that. But, like, Al Davis had real relationships with his players to the point where if they went wrong, it could be toxic, you know? But but just the sort of sports owner that doesn't exist anymore. And, again, I'm excited to watch the 30 for 30.
Yeah, for sure. So we're doing that. We've been talking forever about watching the Ted Danson NBC sitcom Mr. Mayor.
Let's do it.
So we're gonna do that. We're doing that this week, and then we've also sort of been talking, you know, not on the podcast, about the Marvel show WandaVision. Mm-hmm. You know, I have a checkered relationship with the Marvel universe, extended universe, as it were. But I've heard some decent things about the show, so
it's very weird, and it is.
I'm willing to give it a shot.
I'll tell you this: it's not. You're not gonna watch it and be like, ah, same old comic book BS. I don't care. Like that will not be your reaction.
I get that sense.
Yeah.
I get that sense. So we'll check that out. And that pretty much is it. Challenge tomorrow night, right? So we'll be back with an episode on Thursday.
We sure will.
I think that's all I got, man.
Okay, bye.
I can't wait. I'm so fired up for another challenge.
The challenge. Okay, really, bye.
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed. The light's out. Butter's getting hard, the eggs are cooling, and the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor, have yourself a tremendous evening.